WNYC Studios is supported by the Brennan Center for Justice, presenting The Failed Experiment of Mass Incarceration. This virtual event on Wednesday, April 17th at 3 p.m. will feature criminal justice advocates and contributors to the new book, Excessive Punishment: How the Justice System Creates Mass Incarceration. They will discuss why the American approach to criminal justice is so punitive and how reforms would prioritize human dignity and restoration over retribution. Find more information and register for this event at brennancenter.org/events.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is the Brian Lehrer Show podcast. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but everything we do is available on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and where have we been today? Well, through heat islands, the heat index, and what you really get when you buy an air conditioner. And by the way, we have our first photo posted to our new 100 Degrees of Separation Flickr page, and we're inviting you, if you are a photographer, to go out and document New York in nearly triple-digit heat. We'll see if it really gets as high as the forecast is predicting. But they are saying 102 at LaGuardia later today, 104 tomorrow. So if you are a photographer and want to go out and find the perfect image of these unusual days in New York City, go to it and post them to our Flickr page. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to post to our Flickr group called 100 Degrees of Separation. There is at least one photo already up since we launched it only last hour. And we have also been today through Raul Castro's Cuba and Life Without Fidel and through all four candidates vying to succeed Major Owens. So what's left? Well, your calls and some observations from a guest on the best and the worst and the meaning of MTV as it turns 25 years old today. It signed on August 1st, 25 years ago, 1981. You know it's not your daddy's MTV anymore. If you grew up watching it as an all-day music video channel, you may not even know that music videos are now consigned to the graveyard shift, 3 to 8 a.m. The rest is reality shows, cartoons, celebrity stuff, dating shows, all still targeted at teenagers first and post-adolescence of any age second. So let's take stock of 25 years of MTV. Call us up if you grew up with it. What did MTV mean in your life? Did it shape your musical tastes? Did it turn you on to Madonna or other artists early on who were at least as visual as they were sound rich? Call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. And joining us to help take your calls is Khalifa Hassani, pop critic for the New York Times. Hi, Khalifa. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So after 25 years, what is the meaning of MTV in our culture?
Well, you know, I maybe shouldn't admit this on the radio, but I still learn an awful lot from MTV. I mean, it's certainly, obviously it's not quite as music focused as it used to be, but there's a reason for that, and that reason is that people seem to prefer to watch the reality shows they have on now. And so MTV has turned into almost a, I'm not going to say it's National Geographic exactly, but there's certainly something very ethnographic about it. You know, I feel as if often I turn on, whether it's, you know, Super Sweet 16 or one of the Made documentaries or something, and I'm thinking to myself, wait, this is what's going on in high schools now? Good to know.
So you're using it as kind of anthropology.
Yeah, there definitely is that. I mean, to be honest, in the age of YouTube and other places, it's rare that I see a video on MTV before I see it other places. But the idea of a channel that still has a sort of defining sensibility is really important. I mean, I think part of what's interesting about MTV is the way other channels have tried to adopt its model. I mean, you see, obviously, BET, which is now owned also by Viacom, doing a similar thing, and certainly CMT is basically trying to take an MTV approach to country music, which is totally interesting. So MTV almost as a, not even as a channel, but as an approach to culture, I think is more influential than ever.
So where have those music videos gone? Did reality television kill the video star?
Well, I think in a way, I mean, it depends who you talk to, but I have a feeling if you talk to your average kid in high school, they're probably watching more music videos than someone did 10 years ago, simply because if there's a song, whether it's by an indie band or a mainstream band, you can get online instantly and watch the video whenever you want. So it's different in that you no longer have to wait for MTV to play a video in order to see a video, but I think kids are seeing clips and live clips as well as video clips all the time.
All right, listeners. What influence has MTV had on you? Did it make you raunchy? Did it make you misogynist? Something good? If you watched MTV and poo-pooed your parents' concerns, what do you think about your own teenagers watching it today? Do you have a most memorable MTV moment? What's the best MTV moment and the worst MTV moment that you would identify? Subjective, of course. When did you stop watching MTV? Did you just drift away for more grown-up pursuits, or did you consciously give it up, or do you use it as anthropology to find out what's going on in the teenage world today, like Kalafasane does? And why does the network today still do so well among teens? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email Brian Larashow at WNYC.org. And David in Long Beach, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, how you doing?
Great. Hey, listen, MTV has ruined music. I can't say it any plainer than that.
Make your case.
Take one of my favorite bands of all time, a group called Badfinger. Mm-hmm. Some of the ugliest guys you ever want to see. And yet they made the greatest music and some of my most treasured music. And basically my main point being that MTV has obviously changed the focus of the music from the music itself to obviously the visual part of the package.
Well, Khalifa, how much do you agree with that?
Well, I'd say two things. One is that suggests to me a scientific study that obviously needs to be done, because I don't think it would be that hard to chart the average attractiveness of pop stars through the years, and you could actually see if it's gone up or down. I guess I would say two things. One is that obviously image has always been part of popular music, but the second is that these things don't always work the way you'd think. And a good example of that is American Idol, which is obviously a televised show, and yet American Idol, how can I put it, isn't known for necessarily churning out the cutest pop stars in the landscape. So I think that obviously image is MTV found a way to seize on that, to capitalize on that, but it's not always about, you know, being the prettiest. If you look at someone like Notorious B.I.G. was all over MTV in his heyday while he was alive.
Or a lot of those black leather goth metal bands, that not a lot of pretty boys.
Right, and obviously there is something to be said for having an image, but if anything, I would say MTV was prescient, because, you know, in an age where, you know, the not only magazines but internet and other sorts of branding and marketing is important, yeah, there's no way around image, I don't think.
Ben in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ben.
Hey, I wanted to point out that one of the cultural shifts that MTV's created is that I think that what people call music right now is more typically elaborate dance performances than music. Not that some of these people aren't making music, but you forever hear, and I wonder how your how Kalafasana would reply to this, but in the New York Times and other places, you hear people refer to Madonna, Ashley Simpson, Britney Spears as singers or as musicians, and I think if you really take a look at what they're doing, there's not, you know, it's much more about the choreography, about assembling a group of people, and about dancing for 2 hours on stage than it is about anyone singing. That's not necessarily bad. I'm not a dancer, but in New York City, my guess is 20 years ago, dancers had to get a gig with the ABT. I bet that there's probably 5,000 dancers working in music video work who probably weren't employed 20 years ago. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, Khalifa, what do you think about his premise?
I think it's interesting. I think if I knew more about choreography and dancing, I'd probably say there's not enough good dancing on MTV. I mean, certainly that's someone like Ashley Simpson, you know, not known for it. Britney Spears pretty good at it. Obviously, Madonna has always been, you know, really interested in dance and did a lot of interesting things with dance on her most recent tour. I mean, certainly you could say that MTV has weirdly kept alive this old kind of pre-rock and roll tradition of you know, almost like a updating Broadway and Busby musicals and all this kind of thing with the song as this big multimedia spectacle and singing and dancing. But I think if you also looked more closely at it, you'd see over the years that dance videos kind of go up and down, and the popularity of choreographed routines certainly goes up and down.
And I wonder even if that's so new. I mean, you could look back to, you know, old Broadway productions.
Of course, yeah.
And even older movies that had a lot of singing and dancing along with the singing.
The trend I like that you've seen a little bit on MTV is that occasionally in response to this, especially in hip-hop, you'll get anti-dancing videos. I'm thinking of Fat Joe's Lean Back, which is all about, you know, how as people don't dance, we just pull up our pants and lean back. Or this new video by 3-6 Mafia called Side to Side, which similarly is about how they and their friends are up in the club kind of not really dancing at all. So I like the idea that dance is popular enough on MTV that you see music videos that are dance backlash.
We're taking calls from people of any generation on MTV at 25 years ago today. It signed on the air. And its meaning in our culture, and its meaning to you, and your best and worst MTV moments, if you've been a watcher, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlarishow@wnyc.org. And John in Glen Rock, you're on WNYC. Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Not bad. Just working right now, driving.
And?
Well, I was just listening, and I've actually been heated about MTV in the past couple of years. Like, for a while now. I mean, I'm 19 years old, and, like, I remember watching it in the 90s and stuff, and, you know, it wasn't bad. But these past couple of years of all, like, the new emo music and all the screamo music and all the hip-hop and just the ridiculousness of it, I just feel that it's changed, like, the kids these days, you know? Like, I'm just out of high school a couple of years, and I still look back at the kids there, and I see that They've changed, you know. Like,
what?
I just feel like the music that MTV is putting on, and like the music videos, is just bringing the kids down these days. Like,
what's it like to feel old at 19?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm just basically beginning my adulthood. And,
yeah.
Like I listen to classic rock. Like I'm disappointed on how much the music has changed from back then to like to now.
What did you like on MTV when you liked it?
Well, when I watched it, I would just watch the rock shows, you know. Like, I wouldn't watch like the emo music or like the screamo bands, mm-hmm. or the hip hop, just because I just think, and especially hip hop, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me that they would talk about, like, you know, doing stuff with girls and have them doing stuff to them and them just calling bitches and stuff. I don't know.
Khalifa?
Well, I do think that part of the genius of MTV is that it finds a way to make 19-year-olds feel old, and I say that because it wasn't so long ago that I was a 19-year-old watching MTV and feeling old and wondering what was wrong with people. But I also think that part of what's interesting or valuable about MTV is that, unlike radio, it's not really formatted. So you have generations of kids, you know, this generation growing up watching emo and screamo videos up against, you know, club rap videos and all this other stuff. But, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was grunge videos next to R&B videos. And I think to see all those different songs collide, sometimes unhappily, and to see all those genres reflected not just in the videos but also in the reality shows and other things has, I think, both reflected and changed something slightly about youth culture and has in a sense let kids know that there are different things that they can plug into, different things that they can choose, and I think in a way has worked to mix up these genres a little more so that people grow up thinking it's sort of normal to enjoy screamo and a slow R&B song and a crazy hip-hop track and maybe a boy band. There is something to, I think, to a lot of viewers that's slightly distasteful about it. But the thing that keeps MTV honest, of course, is just chasing the numbers. And, you know, there's always going to be people that don't want to watch it. But I like the idea that at every minute they're thinking, how do we keep those high school kids watching?
And John, thanks for your call. Good luck. Call us again. Kala Fasane, pop critic for the New York Times, taking your calls on the 25th anniversary of MTV and emails. And here's an email, subject line, MTV's racism. And it says, when MTV first started, it refused to play black musicians and did so proudly.
Yeah.
For me, that tainted MTV and makes its birthday a sad occasion.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. I mean, the interesting thing about that, though, is that when MTV first started, especially the R&B videos were considered by some of the executives at MTV, I think, to be kind of unhip compared to the, you know, supposedly hip rock and roll videos. And, you know, it took Michael Jackson and some other stuff to get R&B on. But the interesting twist to that, of course, is that for MTV, with its kind of emphasis on youth culture and cutting edge, et cetera, it was very hospitable to hip-hop. And the odd twist is that, especially in the early years, MTV was more hospitable to hip-hop than BET was, and in fact led the way, and MTV had Yo MTV Raps before there was a huge hip-hop presence on BET, and it kind of forced BET to start playing some hip-hop videos. So it was odd. It was MTV was kind of behind for a while, and then it almost leapfrogged a channel like BET, and obviously now BET is, you know, mainly hip-hop all the time. But, I mean, that issue of what cultures are getting represented on MTV is an important one, and I think now it's probably something that executives are trying to struggle with in terms of Latin culture and Latin music, which has, right now, a pretty small presence on MTV.
Paul in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hey, Paul.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say best moment was when MTV started showing the actual Michael Jackson Billie Jean video, which, as you said, kind of opened it up for African-American artists. But the worst moment, I thought, was the beginning of The Real World, which opened up the reality floodgate and essentially started every reality. You know, that's probably the grandfather of all reality shows. It started from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true, and my only problem agreeing with that is that I've been kind of addicted to The Real World since the first season, and I always felt that The Real World kept showing. My favorite moments on The Real World are always the most awkward and uncomfortable moments, especially some of the stuff dealing with race and dealing with gender, because I remember time and time again you'd see these moments on The Real World and you'd think there's no way this could happen on a scripted show because this is just too uncomfortable.
David in West Nyack, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. My comment is that if I was an executive with MTV now, I think I'd be pretty nervous because my two children have completely stopped watching television.
What?
And they're on to new media, and that does not include TV.
Is that MTV's real competition today, Khalifa, the internet?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something they're working on. You know, they're trying to launch this MTV Overdrive, which is sort of, you know, viewing on demand, broadband website. And they're working on MTV Urge, which is their music store. I mean, yeah, obviously, it's interesting. It's like the way music executives are freaking out now. Yeah, a few years later, obviously TV executives and cable TV executives are going to be freaking out. What I imagine, what I hope, is that MTV's strategy, which has generally been to do everything cheaply, produce tons of content, and just sort of see what sticks, that doesn't seem like a bad way to try and navigate the new media world. So maybe that caller's kids will end up, you know, connecting back with MTV in the form of podcasts or online downloads or something.
One more disgruntled emailer who's now a college student says, I watched MTV in middle school, now in university, and abhor most of the programming on the channel. The channel's success is based on the complete corporatization of music. My generation's lives are much more shallow by our fixation on high schoolers and teenagers. 20 seconds for a last word.
Well, certainly it's hard to think of a more corporate-driven music industry than the industry in the 70s, which MTV kind of replaced. And I always see the opposite. I'm always surprised by how complicated and interesting high schoolers' lives are.
And relevant the channel continues to be?
For me, anyway.
Kala Fasane, pop critic for the New York Times. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, dude.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Talk to you tomorrow. Yeah. thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.